all, thanks for joining us on the Cream of the Crop podcast, dedicated to agriculture. We talk to top leaders, share top ideas, and discuss top trends and products. We get to the heart of ag and put the issues on the table.
Well, welcome to our podcast. We're so excited today to have Artha Jonasaint with us. Hey, Artha.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Awesome. Well, we've heard about you in our industry. We've heard about you going to Harvard, being an FFA officer, being a part of the Food Policy Council, all of these things. And it sounds like you're submersed in every aspect of ag. So can you kind of give us an introduction of who you are, what you do?
Yeah, of course. So my name is Artha, and I was born in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, but I moved to Okeechobee very, very young, before my fifth birthday, in fact. So I've lived in Okeechobee for just about all of my life. My parents emigrated from Haiti in the 80s, and they started their family in South Florida in the 90s. I have one older brother. He's like my best friend, my biggest cheerleader and role model, and family is super, super duper important to me. Right now, I study global health and health policy, as well as government at Harvard, because that's just the best intersection of my interest in agriculture, health, and public policy that's offered at Harvard. And I really want to impact legislation that creates more equitable food and health systems. I mean, we grow plenty of food, but it's still so crazy to me that not everyone has access to the amazing work that our agriculturalists do. So that's just a little bit about me.
That's awesome. I love that. I actually work with a project in Haiti about ag. So we might have to catch up and talk about that. It's super awesome. And I could use your help.
For sure.
But most importantly, I think that a lot of people know you from the Florida FFA Foundation and being a state officer, actually the state president of the Florida FFA Foundation. I know you're like a superhero in our state of Florida. So tell us like how you got involved in ag. I know you said that your parents migrated here and then started their family in Florida. When a lot of people look at Florida, they're not really like, oh, that's an ag state. So I know Okeechobee is definitely a rural area. So how did you get involved in FFA?
Yeah, so that's kind of a funny story. So I grew up, like I said, I grew up in Okeechobee, and all of my formal K through 12 education happened in Okeechobee County Schools. But despite being in such an agriculturally rich place, I didn't really know that I had direct ties to agriculture at all. So my mom is a dietitian, and she studied at the University of Florida, and she was a part of the College of Ag and Life Sciences. But like for most of my life, I had no clue that she studied there or was directly involved in agriculture. But the way I got started in FFA was that I was in middle school, seventh grade, and our ag advisor or our ag teacher and FFA advisor, Mr. Buddy Mills, kind of knew me through the grapevines. And he like came up to me one day and he was like, Artha, I know you don't know me. I know that you're not in ag, but I want you to try something out for me and come to the FFA meeting after school. If you hate it, you never have to come again, but just come. And I was like, okay. This like crazy mustache man just approached me. And I was such a people pleaser back then that I was like, okay, I'm just going to go and make him happy. And little did I know, getting started with the extemporaneous public speaking event in seventh grade would lead to this career in the FFA and a passion for agriculture more generally. So I'm so, so thankful that Mr. Mills approached me and that I went to that meeting, because if it wasn't for him, if it wasn't for everything that happened that followed after that meeting, I totally wouldn't have seen myself in this organization or even so passionate for agriculture.
That's really cool. I competed. That was my first contest I ever competed in FFA too. So that's awesome. For those listeners that may not even know what FFA is, could you kind of like sum it up for us in maybe like just a few sentences? What is FFA?
For sure. So FFA is a part of agricultural education, and it really provides students with the leadership skills and industry knowledge of the agriculture industry in ways that manifests itself in ways like contests, leadership development events, supervised agricultural experiences, and different projects so that students get hands-on experience in the ag industry, and they're also developing themselves themselves as leaders so that they're ready to be a part of the workforce, whether that is agriculture or otherwise, so that they're ready to help make this world a better place.
Well, it sounds like you definitely fell in love with FFA as a whole because you're still sticking to it. And you're a sophomore this year at Harvard. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
So for those that don't know, when you're a state officer, you have to take off a whole year of college and you essentially work for the FFA. So you did that and obviously loved it. And then what led you to say that Harvard, I know you said earlier that Harvard was the place because it kind of merged both of your loves together. But what did like the process of saying, okay, I'm going to go to Harvard, I'm going to apply and I'm determined to go there. Like, when did that start?
So for me, it kind of was, I don't know how to describe it. Like I was always a high achieving student. So I was like, oh, Harvard, whatever. But yeah. Like, my parents, my brother, they all went to the University of Florida. So for most of my life, I thought I was going to be a Gator. And then I applied to Harvard just on a whim. Like I totally wasn't going to do it, but then I did. And when I was accepted, I was like, holy cow. So like, I could actually do this thing. Yeah. And then I visited the campus and learned a little bit more about what that would look like for me from an academic landscape, knowing that I wanted to take a year off for state office, seeing how that would work. And Harvard just made itself the most attractive option after everything that was presented to me when I was a senior in high school. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Are you involved in any like, which I know the answer has to be yes, because I can gather that you like to be involved in a lot of things. But are you involved in any like clubs or organizations that relate to your passion at Harvard?
For sure. So I think this manifests most clearly through my involvement with the Institute of Politics. Mm-hmm. I work in the Fellows and Study Groups program, and we welcome 6 resident fellows to Harvard each semester. And these are just esteemed public servants in whatever realm of policy, politics that they're comfortable with. So like I've worked with social secretaries of the White House. I've worked with governors. I've worked with Senator Jeff Flake, like so many different people who are exposed to agriculture. And that's really how I tailor my passions for ag to my academic endeavors at Harvard. So yeah. So
when you say you work with them, is that something that you do like on a daily basis, or do you like take trips? Like, what does that look like?
So it's kind of like on a weekly basis. These people hold study groups at Harvard. So like and by a study group, it's just kind of like an open dialogue with the members of the Harvard community, whether you're a graduate student, an undergrad, anyone who's just in the neighborhood and wants to talk, they'll host programs for them. And I got to be the social secretary of this program. So okay. I had a really cool opportunity to host different types of events, social events for them and for our students. So that might look like a nacho night or pizza night or karaoke night.
Wow.
And just like being able to see a governor sing karaoke is like something I never thought I would do.
Right.
It's awesome that I could.
So yeah. The point of those groups are to hear from the community of a specific issue or maybe something that's going through legislation or something like that. Is that what the point of those are?
Yeah, for sure. So different people have different topics. So some might focus on representation in media. Some might talk about conservatism in the 21st century and just like a wide array of different topics that guide those conversations.
That's so awesome that you get to be a part of like all of them, that some may not even directly relate to what you want to do, but it's something that I think all of us could learn from doing stuff like that. For sure. What is a day in the life of a Harvard student like? I know a lot of people probably want to know because it is a prestigious place to be, but what is a day in the life of you like?
Okay, so every day looks different. It's a lot like state office in that respect. Like when I was a state officer, maybe one day I was in the state capitol, maybe one day I was working a pork trailer at the state fair, maybe I was in a classroom. So like every day looked different, and that kind of followed me to college as well. So I'm an early riser. I like to start my day off pretty early and usually eat at one of the beautiful dining halls on campus. That's one thing Harvard gets right, is like their ancient architecture. It's so pretty. It makes
That's
me
awesome.
Feel smart. And then I have usually about 2 classes, 2 to 3 classes a day. day. And then the rest of my day, I like to fill up with my extracurriculars and just socializing and being a normal human being. Yeah. I feel like a lot of people think that Harvard students are just in their books all day. And if that was the case, I promise you, I would have went to UF or another school. Like, I just can't do that. I do not operate like in books alone. So I work in the admissions office at Harvard, and I'm still doing that over the summer. So I get to connect with so many different students across the nation who are looking at Harvard as a prospective college, which has been so, so fun. And I give tours, and all of my friends will see me like leading a tour group and they'll wave, and we're like so cool and everything like that. I love the Institute of Politics, going to those study groups, connecting with all of those people. And then cultural affinity groups have provided me with a space to just be myself. So I'm currently the sisterhood chair of the Association of Black Harvard Women, and we do lots of fun stuff to ensure that everyone feels like Harvard is a place for them, even if so many years ago when it was founded that we weren't allowed to be in those spaces. So it's been really, really awesome.
What is that that club or organization look like for you guys? Like, is it just an on-campus like fun events type of thing, or do you like do things as far as like politics and stuff like that in that group as well?
Yeah, so it's definitely multidimensional. There's a community service aspect of it, in which we bring students from inner city Boston to Harvard's campus every weekend to do a mentorship program. We have a political action chair that kind of puts together statements for us when something happens on campus or in the world that deserves attention and deserves a statement from our group. We also do professional development, personal development. That's my job as sisterhood chair, to kind of like put together a curriculum for all of us to become better people, essentially better sisters. And yeah, so we do a lot of different things, and I really, really enjoy it.
That's so awesome. I love that. It just sounds so fun. I'm like, I want to be a part of something like that. Like, it just sounds so enjoyable. So I know that you love to advocate, just by what I have heard you talk about the things that you're involved in. And we are an ag company, so naturally we're going to want to talk about advocating for agriculture, which is one of my personal favorite things to do. How do you still advocate for agriculture in specifics while being at Harvard and involved in all these other things?
Yeah, so it's been a very, very important part of my identity to continue to advocate for agriculture and to be an agriculturalist, even in a space where agriculture seems to be on the back burner. Mm-hmm. So like, this comes to life in a few different ways. When I looked at my first semester of Harvard, most of my papers, even if I wasn't in an ag class directly, were about agriculture. Yeah. Like, I wrote a consultant's report, a 10-page paper on why Harvard should have an agricultural studies program. Yes. And I took a class about the human body and food up close and personal, and how nutrition and food plays a direct role in how we live our lives. Yeah. So a lot of that comes into fruition through my coursework, but also in these organizations. So when you're talking to an esteemed politician, it would be remiss if you did not bring up agriculture and like, how does your state, what does agriculture look like in your state? What kind of policies are in place to ensure that farmers have the autonomy to do their job, but people are also having a safe and abundant food supply? Like, what does the balance look like? So being able to be in those spaces and to ask those questions, even when it seems like everyone else is on a different topic or wanting to hear something else, is really, really important and something that I always carry with me. And I think a lot of people, whether they know it or not, are so, so dependent on agriculture, yet they don't know a lot about it. So like having the opportunity to tell people, like, you know, the clothes on your back, the food that you're about to go eat, that all comes from an agriculturalist. It starts on a farm, and you have it here because of this really complex system that is imperfect, but is becoming better every single day. So like, why not learn more about it? And that's just how I try to do my part on campus.
I think it's something that, like, knowledge that we take for granted. The people that know about ag take that knowledge for granted all the time, because you don't realize that when you're walking in the grocery store, people don't understand that a farmer had to grow the food they're eating. And it seems so silly to us, but I know probably where Harvard is that similar agriculture to where you grew up? I didn't think so.
Yeah, absolutely not. One of the things I love most about Okeechobee is that you cannot enter or exit our county without seeing some form of agriculture, whether that's a dairy, whether that's a ranch of some sort with like beef cattle, like you're always seeing ag every time you enter and every time you exit. So that's something that I took for granted, because in the middle of Harvard Square, there are just buildings. There's like a little bit of green space, definitely not enough to have like production agriculture as we see it down here. Yeah. And it's just completely different. But that doesn't mean that it's not agricultural.
Yeah.
There's lots of different urban ag programs that are happening in Cambridge and Boston more specifically. And it's so cool to see how that differs, but how we still all ultimately have the same goal of contributing to an abundant, safe food supply. So it looks very, very different. And it's so cool that I get to like tell my friends, do you guys know what that plant is on the top of that building?
Yeah.
No. And I'm like, oh, it's cabbage. And they're like, oh. So it's just such a cool opportunity for sure.
That's something we definitely don't see a ton of down here. And I think that the more agriculture grows and the more that cities are growing in Florida and people are coming here to retire and vacation, we're going to see a lot more of that. So look at it like you're getting a head start to come back and like educate all of us on urban farming and what that looks like. Are you involved with any like urban farming groups or like organizations that you may help advocate for?
Not really at this time. I'm not involved with any urban ag programs at Harvard or in the Cambridge area more generally. However, there are some like food awareness groups that I'm a part of. So they kind of just work to ensure that like when we are in our dining hall, and because it's a buffet style, that they have that label that tells you like what's in each of the foods and like if it's gluten free and what that means for students who are restricted to a certain diet. But yeah.
So are you involved in like those different food groups on like a deep level? Like, are you helping with the cafeteria at your school, making those decisions of what labels are they getting? Where are they getting the food from and stuff like that?
As a first year, it was kind of more on a surface level and attending meetings and kind of just obtaining all of the information to understand what that system looks like. Gotcha. But like in my upperclassmen years, I'm definitely going to have a more like hands-on approach to what that looks like. So right now it was just kind of like learning what everything was about and then using that information to be more informed. And when I make a recommendation for our cafeteria, because they do implement what students request. So
that's really cool that they do that. It sounds like definitely somewhere like Harvard, there's going to be students that have these opinions and know how to advocate properly for those opinions. So they're probably smart by saying, we ought to listen to our student body here. When you're talking about like urban farming, and we're also talking about advocating, how can someone practically mix those two things together? Someone like me, let's say, I know agriculture, but I may not know urban agriculture. I know how to advocate, but I may not know how to advocate for urban agriculture. So what's something practical that you could tell people on how to advocate on behalf of urban farmers?
I think something that has been very helpful to me in navigating that landscape, like coming from a rural place, going to an urban place and still trying to advocate, using everything that I know about ag to ensure that urban agriculturalists have a level playing field, that they're getting the support that they need, is just remembering that at the end of the day, we all really want the same thing. We want to have a safe, healthy, abundant food supply. We want to be good stewards of the land. We want to make sure that our industry is ecologically sound. We want to make sure that our animals are treated well. Like all of us share these same common goals. Yes. And that's kind of what drives those conversations about agricultural advocacy, even in urban places. So I know a lot about cows because there's a 3-to-1 ratio for people to cows or cows to people in Okeechobee, but that's kind of not the case in Cambridge. It's definitely not the case in Boston. So like, it's important to know that though they look very different, the goals are still the same and we all want the same thing. So that's kind of the tip that I would give anyone wanting to advocate for urban agriculturalists, even if you don't have an urban background.
Yeah. So it seems to be pretty simple, just opening the conversation, having the conversation about what are our goals as not only people, but as a nation. We don't want to have to depend on other countries for our food supply. And we have plenty of food here. It's just a matter of let's making sure, like you said at the beginning, everyone has access to that abundant food supply, which I know that FFA, bringing it back to FFA, has a lot to do with that. And since you are a national FFA officer candidate this year, what has been the process in getting elected or being able to run for national office?
So in the state of Florida, we have a screening process for national officer candidates. And basically it was this year because of COVID and everything just being altered. It was online and you had two personal interviews in which a panel of agriculturalists, ag ed teachers, and other industry professionals interviewed you, gave you questions relevant to anything in the ag industry, whether that's FFA, ag education, or agriculture more generally. They just asked you questions and you answered authentically, and they picked the person that they thought would best represent our state in the fall in the national process. And the national process, yeah, that is a beast. She is 7 different interviews. Some of them are media interviews. Some of them are ag knowledge based interview. So you'll like meet with an industry professional and you'll have a conversation with them. And mind you, you have 5 minutes to like push your agenda as an agriculturalist. So definitely been kind of stuffing my brain with all the ag facts that I can so that I can have productive conversations in those different practicums. Some of them are personal interviews because your job as a national FFA officer is very personal, connecting with students, connecting with teachers and stakeholders. So just making sure that you're a good person is an important facet of that as well. And then there's like tests and writing exercises as well that contribute to that process. But it is in total 7 different practicums before election, and then 9 different students get together and interview you, and they decide who is the best person, the best 6 people rather, to represent the national FFA organization in the coming year.
No pressure, right?
Right.
That seems a little bit stressful, but it's good that you love what the topic is. You know, you love agriculture, so it seems like it's hopefully going to come natural to you. What does it look like this year? So I was on Facebook before this and I saw the big announcement that the National FFA Convention is going to be virtual, which I have been to National FFA Convention, and it is one of the most amazing experiences. You know, you get the chill bumps when you're in the room with all the lights, and it's just so cool. So this year it's going to look totally different. How has that affected you running for office?
Honestly, I have no clue. I saw the announcement probably at the same time that you did.
Oh my goodness. So
I assume that the interviews will be online again. Of course, I'm not privy to that knowledge quite yet. And I'm sure they're being thoughtful and intentional as to how they're putting together that process. Mm-hmm. But it may look like 7 crazy interviews through Zoom. And at this point in my life, I've been on Zoom so much that I'm kind of unfazed by it. But I'm definitely a little saddened. I think you lose a little bit of that magic that happens in person, but of course it's for the best. And if this wasn't the most sound decision, they probably wouldn't have made it. So that's kind of what is making me find solace in all of this.
That's good. I think even advocating right now is looking totally different. Like we can't go to all these different meetings and Congress meetings, like all these things, like just they're not happening. Even like the commissioners of our town, I know a lot of people where I live will go to those on behalf of ag and talk to senators, and people will come in and all kinds of stuff. But now that's not happening. So like, when do you ever think it's going to change? Do you think it's going to go back to that normal advocating style that we used to do?
I think that we will. It totally will. I don't think us as human beings will be able to stay through connecting through screens in the way that we have been in the past 4 months. And I know that there's so many different people, epidemiologists and other kinds of special scientists who are so, so smart that are working on a vaccine so that we can regain a sense of normalcy soon. And I mean, it may be a little off in the future, but I mean, I don't really know a whole ton about COVID and pandemics and epidemics, but like, mm-hmm. I think that in a couple of years, I'm sure we'll be back to normal, but this gives us such an incredible opportunity to use our media platforms yes. in big ways. Like I made a post on LinkedIn and I connected or had like over 100,000 views. And I was like, what the heck? Wow. There's no way I would have talked to 100,000 people just yeah. like sitting in my room doing nothing. So like we have these awesome tools that can travel to so many different people in so many different spaces that we may not have contacted before. So hopefully we can see this as a blessing in disguise and still yes. try to elevate our narrative and send it to as many people as we can.
Yeah, I think just not giving up in this weird, hard time, just not quitting and realizing that ultimately our farmers are still growing our food. They're putting clothes on our back. You know, we have to make sure that we're still doing our part and what we can. I kind of am going to wrap it up, but I'm just so, so thankful that you chose to just have a little bit of conversation with us. I cannot wait until like the day that we can advocate together, you know, like we can be somewhere in the same room talking about ag. Just to wrap up, I have one more question, and it's going to be, what keeps you believing in the future of agriculture?
That is such a great question. And for me, I believe in the future of agriculture. And I hope this doesn't sound corny, no pun intended, but like, I believe in the future of humanity. I believe that we as human beings are going to constantly evolve and we're going to still need food. We're going to still need clothes. And that means we're still going to need agriculture. And in these past few months, I think the resiliency, the tenacity, the creativity of the American people, of the human race entirely, just proves that we have all of the tools necessary that to grow more food in different ways. And I'm just really, really optimistic. I don't know if I'm just naive, but I'm super optimistic. We've been exposed to like unprecedented circumstances, and so many of us have become better because of it. And that gives me hope in the agriculture industry. So I guess my short answer is I believe in the future of ag because I believe in the future of people.
That's something so big that just came down to like one small sentence. You know, people are good. Agriculture is good and people are good. We just have to remember that. Well, thanks again for taking some time. I really look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I had so much fun.
Thank you for joining us today. This podcast has been a presentation of Haz Media, copyright 2020, all rights reserved. Be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook at Highland Ag Solutions.